You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
LaVine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us a text, a voicemail, wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. That's 331-979-1369. Welcome back. For those listening to us, Merry Christmas to you all out there. We are here to do our mailbag segment. So we're going to run through a bunch of voicemails, a bunch of text messages you guys left for us over the last couple of weeks. We want to make sure we clear through all of those, get to as many as possible. Like I said before, 331-979-1369 if you want to drop us something. So without further ado, Matt, I think we should just dive right into these voicemails because we have a ton to get to.
Let's do it.
What's going on, guys? It's Cole from the 217. I'm already knowing I'm on the ledge, just like everybody else is, about the Bulls. I'm about to quit, too. I'm literally right there. I'm on the ledge only because of Wendell and Lauri. Those are the only reasons I'm kind of sticking around. But other than that, I'm off the bandwagon. I'm off everything that the Bulls are doing specifically. I'm becoming a Pacers fan. Let's go, Pacers. Let's fucking go, Victor Oladipo and all them. Fuck, I say, fuck what the Bulls are doing right now, dude. They're fucked up. Everything's fucked up. Everything's been fucked up. You know, I mean, it's just been this bitter taste in my mouth as a Bulls fan for so long. For so long with just absolute shit results. Like, the problem with them is the fact that they get to this peak and then they just quit. Like, middle of the pack is enough for them because they must hit their quota on sales, for ticket sales, jersey sales. They must hit those real nice to be such a shit franchise, to get so many losses, to not accumulate any free agency that are worth a fucking damn, to just be awful, to be one of the largest markets in the league, and we're just utterly ridiculous, utterly unwatchable. It's not even fun watching them. I went to the Pacers Bulls game. That game was so bad on the Bulls' part. They literally made the Pacers look professional, and the Bulls look like college players. That's bad, and it's been that way for so long. I'm fed up. I'm literally on the edge, like that guy was on the voicemail. I'm right there with him. Let's fucking go, Pacers, dude. I'm still finna listen to the pod, but Let's go Pacers this year, man. I'm with what they got going on. They're a stable organization finally. It took them God knows how long to be a decent organization. I'm hoping for the best for them, but it's not looking too good for the Bulls right now, so we'll see. We'll fucking see, guys. But either way, I'm still going to support the Bulls, but I'm definitely not going to watch them. I had league pass last year, and I watch them all the time. If I get it this year, I'm not going to watch them. I'm just making sure that guard packs don't get their pockets increased, you know, because that's what they want. They want us to basically watch and buy shit so they can keep increasing their pockets and increasing their revenue because they don't give a shit about the fan. They don't give a shit about what we have to say, obviously.
All right, thanks, Cole, for the call. He's not the first caller that we've had over the last couple of weeks that said that they were done with what was going on with this Bulls team. And Matt, I kind of told you, I was like, the frustration level has built to a boiling point. But I was like, man, this is going to all blow over in a couple of weeks. And people are either going to forget, they're going to stop being outraged by all of this, and they're just going to kind of tune the Bulls out until we get to a point where either we get to the end of the season and we're at lottery odds again, or something negative happens again with this team. And that's the shitty situation that this Bulls team's in. It's either people are going to pay attention outside of your diehard fans that we have here. The casual NBA fan is going to check in with the Bulls even if there's a negative storyline, or at the end of the season when the lottery odds are official, right?
Probably. Like, I feel like everybody handles these seasons differently. Some fans are gluttons for punishment. Some are, you know, just hanging in there watching all 82 because, so I don't know, they host a podcast 5 days a week, like you and I. If you want to give up on the Bulls and just stop watching them right now and don't want to check in until maybe you're curious to see who they get in the draft next spring, fine. You're allowed to do that. You're also allowed to complain about the different parts of this organization that you find to be faulty right now. You have a right to air your grievances. That's primarily why Jordan and I opened up this text and voicemail line so fans can call in and get things off their chest. And that's part of being a fan. There are bad years that you have to fight through. But if you're going to take the route that Cole is suggesting here and just say, I'm done with this team and I'm going to go be a Pacers fan, I guess you have a right to do that. But I would never. I mean, I sit here and talk about all of the different things that I see wrong with this organization and how frustrating it's been to watch them try and fight their way back to relevance since MJ and Phil and Scotty left in 98. And it's been 20 years since the dynasty ended. 20 years. And it seems like we are farther away from a championship right now than we've ever been. And that is understandably frustrating. But I'm not now, nor will I ever, getting to a point to say I'm so fed up with this team that I'm giving up on them and I'm going to go be a fan of a different NBA team. I can't do that. It's like it's not in the way that my brain and heart function together as a sports fan in the city of Chicago. I will never let myself do that, but I'm not going to judge you if you do.
Yeah, the only way that I think I would is if they decided to like trade off marketing or trade off Carter. Like, I'm with you, Matt. I think, you know, it's written in my DNA to like to grow up loving the Chicago teams in this city outside the Chicago Cubs. But written in my DNA says be and stay a Bulls fan no matter what. And you're right. These years are difficult. And Matt, I don't know why I did this, but I spent some time because I couldn't find a timeline that represented every move that the Bulls have made, every storyline out there that has been made since the Bulls decided to hit the rebuild button on June 22nd, 2017. I put it out on Twitter, and if it's a good guideline to see where the Bulls rebuild is, what moves they were making, and if we are on a timeline that actually puts us in a position to be halfway decent sooner rather than later. And I'll leave the fans up to deciding that, but there has been a lot of moves, a lot of storylines in this rebuild in just 18 months, just 18 months of a rebuild. And I think I'm with you too in the same sense that I knew going into this rebuild when we talked about it that summer when Jimmy Butler was traded. We said, this isn't going to take 2 years. This is going to probably take longer than that. And to get back to where we want to ultimately be at, and that's back to the NBA Finals, it's going to take longer than 2 years. And these years are going to be frustrating. Ask any team that's gone through a rebuild recently. Go ask 76ers fans how they felt back in 2013 and 2014. I mean, yeah, they were tanking on purpose and they were trying to get those picks, but they made wrong decisions too that expanded their rebuild. I mean, drafting Nerlens Noel and drafting Jahlil Okafor, like all of those moves set them back too. So it's a frustrating time, but I will say if you look around the league to the teams that are successful that were able to rebuild and put this thing together, it's like the outcome of that is worth the misery that we're pursuing right now. And we're just hoping that this Bulls team can get back to that point where we're at the top of the East, that we're back to the finals. But to me, to piecemeal together a team to be exciting and to be back in the playoffs as a 7 or 8 seed, I have no interest in doing that. And I know there are some fans out there that wish that that would be the route that the Bulls would take. But to me, I have no interest in being the 7th or 8th seed anymore. I want to be back in the NBA finals and nothing less. And I don't care how long that takes. That's where my bar is set now.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously you have to get to the middle point before you get to the end point.
Right.
And the Bulls are trying to become at least a relevant team that's playoff bound. And I think that's the hard part that fans are trying to wrap their heads around right now, is especially those who didn't understand why we traded Jimmy Butler. And I certainly do understand why. The Bulls were a 7-8 seed at best, with a bunch of aging veterans and one veteran in his prime who clearly wasn't good enough to win you a championship as the best piece of your team. And that's why you tore everything down and started over. And now the Bulls are trying to build this young core to get back to championship contention. And before they have to do that, they have to prove that they are capable of at least being competitive. And it's going to take a while. You know, rose-tinted glasses folks like our pal C. Red Fred want to believe in the immediacy and expedited pace of this rebuild, and that, you know, he thought playoff bound this season, and now those people have to backtrack that because mostly injuries, whatever, coaching chaos and upheaval. It's going to take a while. I honestly, right now, I would say, saying that the Bulls are going to make the playoffs next year, no guarantee. Nowhere near a guarantee, but stepping stones. Hopefully the people running this team continue to make forward steps as opposed to backward steps, but we all know that sometimes there are backward steps too.
Kind of walk before you run, right?
Oh yeah, of course.
I'm with you too. And like anybody that was talked in by the front office that this team could potentially be a playoff team this year, that was all lip service. That was all lip service from the front office, and you see it now coming to fruition. And look, the injuries didn't help this Bulls team. I mean, we could be talking about a different team had the injuries not happened this season. You know what I'm saying? Like, you lost Denzel Valentine, you lost Bobby Portis, you lost Chris Dunn, Lowry Markkanen, Zach LaVine. Like, those are all players that play 20, 25 or more minutes a night that you were relying on to be able to win you games. So,
but I think it's still a sub-500 basketball team if everybody's healthy. I really
agreed.
Do.
I think that's what we agreed on too at the beginning of the season. We're like, this team might surprise us in stretches of the season, but I still think this is a 30 to 35 win team at its best this right. season, just because of the amount of young players that they had. But yeah, the injuries didn't help, and obviously the playoff talk was a little bit of lip service from this front office. But don't make that was the other thing, Matt. Too, before we get to our other callers, I don't want fans to feel like now we're at this point and listening to what the front office tells us that this was their plan all along. Don't buy into that, because that was not their plan. Their plan was to be competitive this year. And they spouted off about potential playoff. You know, they said they weren't going to count wins and losses, but really in the back of your mind, the moves that they made this summer were indicative of saying, okay, we're going to try to push this thing even to the next step and try to get people interested and excited. And maybe there's a potential opportunity for a playoff spot. And that didn't happen. And any realistic fan knew that was those types of expectations were just not realistic for a young team this year. And even fully healthy, those were unrealistic expectations. So Don't let them try to spin you and say that this was their plan all along to be the worst team to be back in the lottery, because that certainly wasn't the case at the beginning of the season.
And they wouldn't admit to it.
Absolutely not.
Hey, man, this is Corey Bashfield from Peoria, Illinois, and I'm just calling in to say you don't know how happy I am. Like, in this terrible season of everything going wrong, you don't know how happy I am to read about Jabari Parker minutes being cut. Because this man is boo-boo on the court. Like, off the court, I have no problem with him. He seems to be a great guy. But on the court, this man is hot garbage, bro. Like, and the reason why he sucks so bad is because he's a ball-dominant player, but his handle is weak. And that's, like, one of my biggest issues with Jabari. He wants to do all this ISO one-on-one drive to the hole, but you have no athleticism, and your handle is weak. Like, go watch the games and look at his handle. It's high as hell. He really doesn't have any really good crossover move at all. And he's tapped out, man. I keep seeing these articles talking about who should trade for Jabari Parker. And I'm, like, laughing my ass off. I'm like, who wasted time writing this article? No one is going to trade for Jabari Parker. Not the Atlanta Hawks, not the Suns, nobody. Nobody wants Jabari Parker, man. We're just going to have to eat this season. Hopefully he can add to some tank wins if he gets on the court at all anymore. I want to see Chandler Hutchinson. So that's just my thoughts on the thing. Go Bulls.
All right, thanks. Appreciate the call. Matt, I'm going to let you touch on this because you were fully out on Fred Hoiberg. I was the only person I felt like in the Bulls Nation, and it's funny how people now want to back Fred after all the things that have happened to Boylan, but they don't have to be one and the same. You can dislike Fred Hoiberg and also at the same time dislike Jim Boylan. But yes, I felt like Fred Hoiberg didn't get a chance and should have given one last opportunity. And, you know, besides all of that nonsense about no energy, no any of that, still felt like he deserved one more chance. Matt, I'll let you explain that.
Yeah, so I understand what this caller is saying and feeling like there's a little bit of confusion as far as how we, or certainly I, feel about Fred versus how I feel about Boylan. Our caller is right in saying that I was happy to see Fred go because, in my opinion, whereas you thought you might still believe in Fred Hoiberg's ability to be a good X's and O's coach, you know, even in the NBA level, to me that was irrelevant because there's one thing that Fred couldn't do, and that was communicate effectively with his team, whether they were young kids or whether they were veterans. And he certainly couldn't handle the egos of said veterans and certainly the star caliber players. And to me, at the NBA level, that is more than 50% of a coach's job, is handle the egos and get everyone to play and play nice so that you can go out and win games together. And that, to me, is something Fred always showed us he wasn't capable of doing, so I was fine that the Bulls fired him. Now, where the caller gets confused with, well, if you were complaining about Fred's weak personality and inability to, like, you know, handle NBA players, then why are you complaining about Jim Boylan coming in and handling NBA players and you know, being rougher on him? There's a difference. There's a fine line that you can walk. And to me, and this is what we were talking about, you know, reacting to our conversation with NBA vet Trevor Booker, who joined us last week. The things that we have seen from Jim Boylan are not normal. And some of it can be John Paxson saying, oh, I want to whip these guys into shape, and Jim Boylan has our full support to do so. And I'm fine that he's making them run wind sprints and doing push-ups on a practice after back-to-backs and blah, 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 blah. Look, I mean, I don't understand that our caller is saying, well, these young guys make all this money, and so they should listen to the coach. What the hell does that have to do with anything? This is the NBA. These are professionals. Some of them might be fairly young, but they are professionals. And with that comes ego. With that comes the understanding of how an NBA season works from start to finish. And Boylan coming in and trying to put down this authoritative hammer, It's a strategy, and it's a bold one from Boylan, but it certainly seems like he's just following orders, and it's the front office that wants him to do this, and it's ownership that wants him to do this. But it's the way he's gone about it that's making everybody turn their head and say, whoa, wait, this isn't normal. watching film immediately following a game, that's not normal. Running wind sprints after a back-to-back, that's not normal. This full week of practice is on every day that you don't have a game. That's not normal. And it's not just that. It is the way that he immediately denigrated and criticized and called out his players to the media, to the fan base. A game that you lost by 56 points because you chose to lose by 56 points because you chose to sit your starters and make your scrub bench go out there and play an entire second half. And you, Jim Boylan, wear that 56-point loss just as much as the players do because you orchestrated it that way and then said to the media immediately following, I thought your play was embarrassing, and questioning their toughness. The players have a right to stand up for themselves and say, hey, man, we're the ones out there trying. We're the ones out there trying to not get our butts kicked. Zach LaVine logging the most miles covered on NBA court this season. Justin Holiday playing, 36, 38 minutes a night. There is a disconnect between the dominant authoritative figure that Jim Boylan is trying to be and the norm of the way the NBA operates. And that can be true, and it can also be true that Fred Hoiberg always failed to motivate and or control his guys. Those can both be true.
I think our caller brings up a pretty decent point, though, and I understand where he's coming from in saying, like, nobody on this team has qualified themselves as a leader, has stepped ahead and been able to do that. And that was part of this problem, is this locker room didn't have a voice and didn't have a leader. And that was something that we talked about with Fred Hoiberg when he was here. It's like this team, every single time, it seems like every time they lose a game, they come out and say, well, we didn't play with any energy. We lacked energy. We lacked effort. We don't have a voice. We don't have one person that's kind of grouping us all together. So I get it from that facet. Maybe your head coach then needs to be that guy for a while. But ultimately still, if you're going to be a connected NBA team, as far as the players go and the coach, there is also separation there. It's like, even if your coach is going to be your leader, you still need a player to have that type of voice. And doing it with the leadership committee, I don't think that's going to work, but maybe it will. I don't know. There's a first time for everything, but I agree with you too, Matt. The way he approached it in the first 2 weeks, I think if he sat down and looked at it again, if Boylan did, and looked at everything that he did in his first 2 weeks here, he would change a lot of the tactics that he instilled right away, calling his players out, calling their conditioning out, running them ragged. Like, look, we knew that there needed to be a change, but it didn't need to be this extreme. So I think what I'm understanding from you, Matt, is going from one extreme to the other isn't necessarily a good thing. And that's not necessarily what you were calling for either. It's like, you got to find some type of middle ground to have some energy and some effort, but at the same time, don't belittle your players. And these guys at the end of the day are professionals, and don't belittle them and treat them like they're in high school for that fact.
Right. Exactly. There's a difference between Fred Hoiberg inability to control NBA egos and Jim Boylan treating his players like children. There's a middle ground somewhere there. So I can take issue with the failures that Fred showed us time and again as a head coach in the NBA as far as doing the part of the job that is most important, which is just getting those guys to get along and making sure that communication is streamlined throughout coaching staff, players, everywhere, and saying Jim Boylan treats his players like children. There is some middle ground, and it's fine to take issue with what Fred Hoiberg failed to do and also take issue with what Jim Boylan is trying to do, because somewhere in between there is an NBA coach who has enough voice and authority for his players to buy in and follow along and get themselves to play together and also feel like they are not being treated like children in, Annie from, like Orphanage from Annie kind of dictatorship. It was like, oh, or like Oliver Twist being like, oh, please, sir, can I have some more mush? Can I have some more porridge on this Christmas Eve? No? All right, I guess I'll starve. Thanks, Jim Boylan.
So I think,
sure, you don't want to like spank me on my behind for not running that wind sprint fast enough? Give me a break.
The only other problem I have with, and I was told I was reaching on this, Matt, and maybe you can bring me back down to earth, but what did I say at the beginning of Jim Boylan's era? I said, This team running 2.5 hour practices, sprints, doing all of these little things when you haven't been healthy all season, you're not going to be happy until someone gets hurt. And what happened? Zach LaVine hurt 2 to 4 weeks. He's out. Bobby Portis rolls his ankle in the middle of the game. He's out 2 to 4 weeks. Like, and everybody's saying, like, you're reaching on that. They hurt themselves in game. They hurt themselves in game, but the fact that they got hurt and the fact that they were running 2.5 hour practices and not having time to rest and recover, that's it might not be the single issue is the reason why those two guys got hurt, but it plays a factor. When your body doesn't have time to recover, go listen to our episode with Trevor Booker again. He says your body needs time to rest and recover. You need time during these games when you're giving it your full effort. If you don't have that time to do it, you're more susceptible for injuries. And I said it, like, we're not going to be happy about, and Jim Boylan's not going to be happy about having to condition his players while the season's going on until somebody that is part of this core gets hurt. And it happened. And we're lucky it's only 2 to 4 weeks about Zach LaVine. We're lucky that the Bobby Portis's injury wasn't worse than it is. But those types of things are trickle-down effects from what Boylan had implemented at the beginning of this season. So, like, to me, that was another wild factor. It's like, man, this team hasn't been healthy all year and you're running them up and down the gym. Like, to me, that just didn't make any sense. And I was like, dude, we're going to see an injury happen in the next few weeks. And it might not come in practice. It'll come in a game. But that clearly tells you that, like, these guys are running ragged. And, like, we don't need that when a team has been decimated by injuries all season. And this was really the first time that this entire team has been healthy all year. So it's not a huge factor, but it does. It plays a trickle-down effect when guys don't have the proper time to rest and recover. It all adds up. And maybe I'm reaching. Maybe that's a reach on my part, but I feel like it does play a factor into some of these guys getting hurt now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I don't think you're reaching. I think there is some correlation there, and I think that's why some fans are saying, whoa, like, Jim Boylan's got to take it easy.
Hello, Jordan. Hello, Matt Peck. This is Patrick from Northwest Indiana. I just have to say I love you guys' show. Excellent work by the both of you. Great win for the Bulls tonight. Chris Dunn was clutch, and he was clutch yet again. Just want to make a point. I believe in tight game on the line situations, moving forward in crunch time, in clutch time, Chris Dunn should have the ball and the green light to score or make a play over Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine's been good this year. He's much improved. But if we look at his stats, probably in the last couple minutes of a tight one or two possession game, he's been highly inefficient. You know, whether if it's having the ball slip out of his hands on the final possession or taking highly questionable shots. And more times than not, he's just flat out missing more attempts than not when the Bulls need it most. And then when you look at Chris Dunn, you know, look at last year in December when the Bulls had that great stretch. Chris Dunn was coming through in the clutch when the Bulls needed it most, when it was crunch time in the final minute of games. He was making those buckets that would put the Bulls over the top. And he did it again tonight, and I think there's enough of a sample size now. So moving forward, I believe Chris Dunn should have that ball when the Bulls need a bucket over LaVine, you know. And it's going to be interesting to see how that develops because earlier this season, LaVine said he didn't want to be second fiddle, I believe, in an interview with Vincent Goodwill. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. But I think for the betterment of the team, Chris Dunn should have the ball in crunch time over Zach LaVine. Let Zach get his buckets in the first, second, third quarter, the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter or whatever. But when it's real close and it's tight in the fourth quarter and the game's on the line, I want the ball in Dunn's hands over LaVine. Guys, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a great week ahead and go Bulls.
Clutch time. if we're talking about it, obviously we haven't gotten to see LaVine and Dunn both play at the same time during crunch time for that long of a period. But I think he makes a pretty decent case. You know, if we take what we saw last year and complement it with a few games this year, you know, he does have a case about Chris Dunn being a guy that's got the clutch gene. And I don't know if I'm ready to completely stamp it with him yet, but he's shown us good things in the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. More good than bad, right?
Yeah, so this caller was calling in after the Bulls' comeback win against the Spurs, which was certainly one of their more impressive wins this season. And Chris Dunn really helped them get that win locked down with some efficient play late in the game. But we also, just on either end of this game, saw close games where the Bulls fell to Orlando before that and then fell to the Brooklyn Nets after that. And Chris Dunn was guilty of some late game turnovers. Offensive foul. I think it was actually an offensive foul in both situations. One where Chris Dunn had the ball and was guilty of a push-off, and then one where he set an illegal screen. So, I agree with our caller that Zach LaVine has not been clutch in his moments this season when Dunn was out, Markkanen was out, and LaVine was being asked to be the guy, and he was turning the ball over like crazy. There's certainly truth to that, and I have concerns about that. There is also truth to Dunn in that game, which was a win over San Antonio, being a solid crunch time guy. And you mentioned he also did that in stretches last season when healthy. But we've also seen the bad Chris Dunn, guilty of committing turnovers and not running the offense efficiently late in games. So if our caller is saying, I'd rather see Chris Dunn be the guy late in games more so than Zach LaVine, I think it's fair to feel that way, but I think there's good and bad with both of them.
I agree. So let's not discredit either. Like LaVine, like let's not forget about the first couple of games in the season. How about the win against the Hornets? Remember Jabari Parker setting the screen at the top of the key and Zach LaVine basically bum rushing the basket and scoring that game winner against the Hornets. Like he has done good things in crunch time. So this season, looking at clutch time stats, 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, not up or down more than 5 points. Zach LaVine has 51 points this season for the Bulls. He's only shooting 40% in clutch time. He's taken 49 shots, so that's not great to see. And he's had 10 turnovers, which are the most among this Bulls team. But yes, he's had to be because of out of necessity. But if you go back to last season when Chris Dunn played, I had mentioned this at the beginning of our season, Matt, all the way back in September, I pulled our tweet and I had gone through clutch time stats and who was the guy last year that the Bulls were relying on in these late game situations? Out of 521 players, Chris Dunn came in at number 25 in the league. He scored 76 points in clutch time and shot 48.3%. That's 5 points higher than his normal per game stats. So Chris Dunn, top 25 in clutch time. The Bulls played in a lot of those games where they were down to the wire and they were within five and things didn't end up happening that way. But him and Lauri Markkanen, number 25 and number 26. Lauri Markkanen scored 72 points last year. He didn't shoot great in clutch time, 37.7%, but scored 72 of the Bulls' points in there, and he was number 26. So he does have an argument about Chris Dunn being that sort of clutch factor. I need to see more of it, and that just comes with games. That just comes with more of a sample size. If Chris Dunn comes out and is again, one of the top clutch time performers this season, then there's a huge argument there to say Chris Dunn maybe does have the clutch gene and maybe we should be looking towards him. But I also want to see what Zach LaVine does with all of these guys coming back. And we don't have those types of references from last year because he only played in 24 games. But he does have an argument about Chris Dunn having sort of that clutch gene and shooting better when the pressure is mostly on him. And so I think I'm with this caller and saying maybe we do give that an idea once Zach LaVine comes back. But I need more of a sample size from all of these guys in order to really stamp something confirmed on any of them. All right, well, I think that's going to about do it here for our mailbag segment. Thank you again to everybody that dropped us voicemails. We're going to get to the text messages later in the week. We had so much to talk about with all of these voicemails. You guys always drop really great questions, and you can continue to do that at 331-979-1369. Thank you again for dropping those. Continue to do it all season long. We love to hear from all of you. Don't be shy. Drop us a voicemail or a text message whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a very Merry Christmas. Thanks for spending part of your day with us. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com